This lecture, titled Economy, Secure Under Divine Providence, was presented on December 6, 1987, at 28th Church of Christ Scientists, Los Angeles, by Mrs. Patricia L. Webb, a member of the Christian Science Board of Lectureship.
In August of 1986, the Christian Science Board of Directors sent a communication to all of the members of the Mother Church and its branches around the world, notifying them that as of January 1st, 1987, all of the lectures to be delivered by members of the Christian Science Board of Lectureship would be focused on topics which the Christian Science Board of Directors deemed were uppermost in public thought today. The four topics which they selected were as follows. Today's challenges to the changing family. Overconcern regarding body. Lawlessness, anarchy, terrorism, and crime. And economic imbalance in the world economy. My lecture this afternoon is designed to quiet fear, to quicken hope, and to reassure mankind. It is also designed to share with you and your community the spiritual truths of Christian Science and contemporary proofs of those truths being efficacious in the healing of economic challenges. It is also designed to fulfill the promise that Mary Baker Eddy, the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, makes in her volume, The First Church of Christ Scientists and Miscellany. I should like to read it to you. She writes, I reluctantly foresee great danger threatening our nation. Imperialism, monopoly, and a lax system of religion. But the spirit of humanity, ethics, and Christianity, sown broadcast, all concomitants of Christian Science, is taking strong hold of the public thought throughout our beloved country and in foreign lands, and is tending to counteract the trend of mad ambition. End of the quotation. Even though this statement is based on Mrs. Eddy's evaluation of the economy of the United States, she also includes foreign lands in her reference to the spirit of humanity, ethics, and Christianity, which are active forces throughout the world. Mrs. Eddy well knew that man's sufficiency is of God, and she well knew that the spirit of humanity, of ethics, and of Christianity must be cultivated in human thought in order to set aside the imbalance and the cruelty of insufficiency and lack. Yes, the purpose of my lecture is to show that through Christian Science, there can be established in the human economy a fuller humanity, a more spiritual ethic, and a benevolent Christianity, which will result in an increase in man's security and his assured affluence as the child of God under divine providence. The Christian Science Board of Directors, in focusing on the topic of economic imbalance in the world economy, brought to the attention of the members of the Christian Science Board of Lectureship the following challenges for consideration. The economic disparities between nations. The plight of the underclass of unemployables. The argument that jobs in a service-oriented economy are less rewarding, and advertising and business methods which appear to be amoral, if not immoral, if not really criminal, including the sale of illegal products, and the sale of products that are injurious and destructive to man, to his health, and to his well-being, to his morality, and to his integrity. The burden of national and personal indebtedness and the paralyzing effect of both of these. And finally, the expediency, justified by conventional wisdom, that indulges in less than humane practices on the theory, but this is business. This theory opens the door to the dishonesty of expediency in dealings. And expediency allows for different standards for personal and corporate behavior. Expediency is based on the concept that subordination of moral principles for the sake of facilitating an end or purpose is indeed immoral in business. It is based on the concept that it is legitimate to use whatever seems suitable or apt in order to attain the end desired and in view. It is based on the concept that indulgence of devious action is legitimate, and that it is also predicated on the idea that expediency is conducive to special advantage, even though it may not be universally right or moral. Expediency often includes a politic approach to things as well, assuming that that which appears to be judicious and tactical may have value, even though it is usually based on a wholly material and selfish motive. Christian Science enables the businessman and woman to avoid the expedient and the politic, and to pray for that which is aligned with divine principle in their every action, their every motive, and their every ambition. Christian Science presents the divine economy of God and reveals that man reflects the divine economy in affluence, in sufficiency, in order, and in abundant supply and reward. Therefore, the arguments of economic imbalance, inequalities between nations and men, inadequacy of opportunity for rewarding activity and employment, the paralyzing burden of debt, and the dishonesty of expediency can all be rectified and justly healed and solved. The argument of economic imbalance and pervasive lack can be eradicated through the revelation of the teachings of Christian Science. Economic imbalance and lack have their root in the concept that resources are limited and are controlled by a privileged few. Let us ask ourselves a question. Do we believe that resources are limited and are controlled by a privileged few? Then we believe that they are material and that good is finite. This belief is based on a thoroughly material concept of the universe, of its creator, and of man. You and I must gain a wholly new perspective. In the Bible, there are two records of creation in the first chapter of the Bible known as Genesis. The first record is to be found in chapter 1 and verses 1 through 3 in the second chapter. This is called the spiritual record of creation, and it sets forth the following spiritual facts: that the creative principle of the universe is God, that His universe is forever harmonious and eternal, that the infinite space of His universe is peopled with His ideas, that His creation is wholly good, that every idea from the mental molecule to infinity is governed and regulated by God, and that in Genesis 1, verse 26, we read, "Let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion over all the earth." Let them. Man is the family name for the sons and daughters of God, all having one parentage, one infinite father, mother, love. Man's birthright, as set forth in the spiritual record of creation, bestows on man infinite good, abundant life, affluent well-being, and illimitable resources. and God's resources are constituted of spiritual good, unlimited and unrestricted, reflecting His allness and His impartial, universal bestowal of the riches of His love. On each and every one of His beloved children, Genesis 2 has the second record of creation, and it tells us that God, not God, but the Lord God, made the earth, and that a mist went up from the face of the earth, and that man was created out of dust. Mrs. Eddy refers to this as the mortal deviations and inverted images of the Creator and the creation. It is called the Adam dream, and it is the exact opposite of the first record of creation, and it describes man as mutable, as mortal, as under curse, sentenced to limitation and fruitless labor. Matter is seen as the creator, and man as the victim of lack, of deprivation, of hatred, envy, lust, and ultimating in death. You and I need to make a choice. Do we choose to align our thought with the mistaken material account of creation, or do we choose to align our thought with the spiritual record, the light-illumined record of creation? Do we choose the cruel pattern of material finite resources, or do we choose the pattern of the glorious promise and freedom of God's illimitable, impartial outpouring of good on His beloved children? True security, true abundance and affluence are found only in the spiritual record of creation, and the choice is ours. Mrs. Eddy has written in Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, her textbook, which she authored and published in 1875. She has written that security for the claims of harmonious and eternal being is found only in divine science. Let us ask ourselves another question. Do we believe and fear that man's security can be lost? Security is freedom from danger, freedom from want, freedom from fear, and freedom from deprivation. And security gives protection, confidence, safety, and opportunity. Security is found in the sweet and certain sense that God, divine love, ever-present life, confers on man safety, confidence, and hope, confers on man supply, abundance, and satisfaction. There is a promise in the book of Job. Let me read it to you. Thou shalt shine forth, thou shalt be as the morning, and thou shalt be secure because there is hope. Yea, thou shalt dig about thee, and thou shalt take thy rest in safety, and thou shalt lie down, and none shall make thee afraid. The God-given security, which is man's legitimate heritage, can never be lost, nor can man be deprived of it. Is there not also a choice to be made between man created in God's own image, male and female, complete and whole, and the Adam man, the Adam man, consigned to fruitless labor, to sweaty toil, to deteriorating into death, and woman, a woe man, formed from Adam's rib, destined to live under the perpetual Adamic curse of uncontrollable and greatly multiplied conception, brought forth in sorrow and in pain, and forever beholden to the will of her husband. Adam, according to the curse levied against him, will always find the ground cursed. In sorrow he will eat of it all the days of his life, and it shall bring forth thorns and thistles, His toil shall be by the sweat of his brow, and insufficiency, lack, and inadequacy will always be his lot. It is this unhandled Adamic curse levied against Adam and Eve in the second, the false record of creation, that underlies the economic imbalance in the world economy today and generates envy and jealousy among brothers, among peoples, races, and nations, and leaves the world in turmoil, conflict, and fear. But is not the Adamic curse what mankind assents to today? It's evidenced in some of the challenges with the farm areas, with the inadequacy of food in the impoverished nations, in the imbalance between wealthy, affluent nations and those that struggle to maintain a meager sufficiency for their populations. You will remember that Adam and Eve conceived two sons. One was Cain, the other was Abel. And Abel expressed the higher qualities of spiritual sense, and he brought the firstlings of his flock as an appropriate sacrifice to God. Cain brought a more meager offering, a material offering, and envious and jealous of his brother's offering, in fratricidal hatred, slew Abel. Mrs. Eddy says, "The murderous belief, the erroneous belief that life, substance, and intelligence can be material, ruptures the life and brotherhood of man at the very outset." End of the quotation. This same fratricidal envy was what Joseph's brothers felt against him. You will remember that according to the account in Genesis chapter 37, that Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because Joseph was the son of his old age. And he made Joseph a coat of many colors. When his brethren saw this, the account says, they hated him because he was favored of his father. Joseph dreamed a dream, which he told to his brethren, a dream prophesying that they would ultimately have to pay obeisance to him. And they hated him the more, and they envied him. Later, he was sent to join his brethren who were tending the flocks, and, incited by their envy, they cast him into a pit. Midianites found him, sold him to the Ishmaelites, and Joseph was taken into Egypt. His brothers found him gone, and they sent his many-colored coat, which they had dipped into goat's blood, as evidence of his death, to his father. But Joseph was in Egypt, and he became an aide to Potiphar. Then he became second only to Pharaoh, when Pharaoh chose him as his special aide. He had a steady rise to high positions of authority in the land, second only to Pharaoh. And in fulfillment of Pharaoh's dream, which he was enabled to interpret because of his spiritual discernment and his spiritual intuition, he was appointed to supervise the garnering of the vast food resources of Egypt for 7 years. After 7 years of plenty, then came the famine, 7 years of lack. But Egypt had a full sufficiency due to Joseph's wise economy, and the land was secure. According to the record, all countries came to Egypt unto Joseph to buy corn. And among those who came were 10 of Joseph's brethren. Joseph immediately recognized them, but the account says they knew him not. He required them to bring their younger brother Benjamin to Egypt, and he kept Simeon as a hostage to assure this. And then Joseph wept, had their packs filled with corn, restored to every man their money, and sent them on their way, giving them provision for their journey Sometime later, when their supply was exhausted once again, they returned to Egypt and to Joseph, who inquired tenderly regarding their father, "Is he well? Is he yet alive?" And he wept at the sight of his brother Benjamin. But once again he filled their sacks, and when his brethren begged him not to keep Benjamin for fear that their father would die in the absence of that son, die of grief at the separation, Joseph wept again and made himself known to his brethren and said, according to the account in Genesis, "Come near to me, I pray you. I am Joseph, your brother, whom ye sold into Egypt. Now therefore be not grieved nor angry with yourselves, for God did send me before you to preserve life. And God sent me before you to preserve you, a posterity in the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you that sent me hither, but God. And he promised to nourish them and his father for the remaining 4 years of the famine. He kissed them all and wept once again and sent them off fully prevented. And then, some time later, Joseph's father, Jacob, went down to Egypt, taking with him 66 relatives. And Joseph went in his chariot to Goshen and met and embraced his father. And Pharaoh gave the very best land in Goshen for them to dwell in. And Joseph did indeed nourish his father and all of his brethren. And Joseph healed his brethren's envy and embraced them in love. His spiritual sense, his freedom from hurt, from retaliation and retribution, enabled him to handle the cycle of 7 years of abundance followed by 7 years of lack. And he demonstrated the sufficiency of the divine economy to bless the life of his brother man. What is the divine economy? Webster gives us a theological definition of the word economy as the Creator's plan, the design of providence. And he capitalizes both Creator and providence. So the divine economy is the Creator's plan, the design of providence. And Mrs. Eddy says in Miscellaneous Writings, another one of the volumes that she authored, which is included in Prose Works, that the Spirit bestows spiritual gifts, God's presence and providence. And she says, trust the divine providence. Providence implies God conceived of as guiding man through his loving care, his intervention, and his ever-constant protection for man. We can learn to trust divine providence's guidance, divine providence's sustenance and protection, for God's grace is fully sufficient, altogether competent, and qualified to supply our every legitimate want or need. Divine providence reveals that man is richly endowed with infinite good and inexhaustible love derived from the divine providence, which constitutes God's true nature. Understanding the true economy of divine providence reveals the proper management, regulation of resources, the proper management of the affairs of a community, a country, and a family, and the necessity for thrift to offset the penalties of indebtedness and indulgence, to offset the penalties of excessive taxation and systems of dole. It stresses the strict husbanding of resources and shows how to manage and order and care for our individual economy, so that there is sustained blessing, balance, and affluence maintained. We can rejoice in the promise from 2 Corinthians, our sufficiency is of God. And Joseph demonstrated the true economy and blessed his brethren and did indeed heal their envy. Envy is the root of all lack. And what is envy? It is a form of malice. It is corrosive and consuming. It is the painful and resentful feeling that someone else has an advantage, a special gift, a preferred position above oneself. And envy arouses an urgent longing for that possession of the advantage, that gift, or the position of another. This inordinate longing is based on the concept that good is limited, apportioned by a discriminating and partial God who has cruelly bypassed us in the distribution of his favors. Mrs. Eddy lists envy among the foes to man's grace, peace, and progress, and she says, "These foes must be met manfully and overcome, or they will uproot all happiness." And she says further, "Be of good cheer. The warfare with oneself is grand. It gives one plenty of employment. And the divine principle worketh with you. And obedience crowns persistent effort with everlasting victory." That statement is from Miscellaneous Writings. Many years ago, I had to wage a firm battle against that foe of happiness and progress, known as envy. One night, my husband and I had been invited to a lovely dinner party. All the guests were friends of ours, but as I sat at the table, I found I could not enjoy a single morsel of the lovely meal which had been offered. We had been having a very severe time trying to keep our heads above water. We were deeply in debt. We had two small children. We were living in very cramped quarters, and my husband had been unemployed several times. I was consumed with envy at the obvious comfort, the affluence, the sense of accomplishment that everyone else at that dinner table was expressing. We left the party early. I simply could not stay, and I felt rebellious, angry and imposed on. When I reached home, I knew I had to face what the Bible calls the rottenness of envy. In my thinking that had been so exposed that evening. So instead of retiring, I went up into our small sunroom, curled up in a chair, covered myself with a quilt, and planned to spend the night. I did spend the night till break of day, cleansing my thought of envy. I knew only too well the truth of Mrs. Eddy's statement that envy is the atmosphere of hell. All through the long night, I prayerfully sought to remember every instance of envy I had ever indulged in, of the boy who had the better agate marble, of the girl with the ball-bearing roller skates, of my chum with the soft, butter-soft leather jacket. And the result took me back through my childhood, all through the competitiveness in school, in sports, in popularity, in every aspect of my development, even into my professional activity. And I thoroughly prayed for the baptism of soul to wash me clean. I remembered Mrs. Eddy's statement that the pent-up elements of mortal mind need no awful detonation to free them. Envy, rivalry, hate need no temporary indulgence. They should be stifled from lack of air and freedom. And that statement is from Miscellaneous Writings also. As dawn began to lighten, so did my heart, and I felt refreshed, quiet and tranquil, and the quieting sense did indeed remove the oppressive thoughts and the emotions, and I became untouched by conflict and agitation and finally, at peace. I had at last realized that I was the beloved daughter of God, of my father-mother love, who was imparting impartially and bestowing on me all the riches of his infinite good, just as he was bestowing upon each and every one of his sons and daughters the infinite all of his illimitable, unrestricted supply and affluence. And that foe of peace, grace, progress, and happiness, envy, has never again poisoned my thought or robbed my joy. Never since that time have I lacked for any legitimate, appropriate supply. And my life has opened and expanded into a pattern of usefulness, abiding joy, into deep and rewarding satisfaction and inner peace. During the Deep Depression in the United States in 1929 to 1933, our family was sustained when there seemed to be such meagerness of supply and the tragic failures that were on every side in business. The debacle of that time, so similar to the recent challenge we've had with the stock market, with its manipulations and fluctuations, had left many people desolate and impoverished. We never really lacked for anything through our reliance on Christian Science, anything that was essential or appropriate or legitimate in our experience. And we constantly endeavored to keep every thought, every word, every action devoid of any sense of complaint. We often repeated to ourselves the words of Hymn 249 from the Christian Science Hymnal, "Our gratitude is riches, complaint is poverty." And we were fully sustained and adequately cared for. We saw several businessmen who were relying on Christian Science bring their businesses safely through the threat of failure to continued usefulness and success. Mrs. Eddy, in speaking of Christian Science, has said that Christian Science encourages and empowers the businessman and secures the success of honesty. Mrs. Eddy always opposed the use of worldly material means and the expedient motives from which the world so often operates and acts. And she has said, according to Robert Peel's biography of her, that the smartest businessman is not scientifically a safe businessman. He is not as smart as God while he thinks himself smarter and is quite unconscious of this thought. She goes on to say, "It is the mind that has consecrated its affections, its aims, ambitions, hopes, joys, and fruition in spirit, whose methods and means, plans, and successes are secure. They cannot be separated from success." And then she asks us a question. What is your model businessman? The real scientist who plants in mind God, who sows in mind and reaps in mind, or he who begins with political economy, human plans, legal speculations, and ends with them dust to dust? I should like to share with you at this time a portion of a businessman's address to the Gerald Ford Institute at Albion College in Michigan. Gerald Ford's Institute was designed to teach true economics and to show how the study of true economics could indeed set aside the fluctuations in the human economy. This businessman's address was entitled, "How Christian Science Study and Practice Supports My Business Activities," and he wrote as follows: "Our business has relied primarily on Christian Science for its growth, in good times and in bad times, in war and in peace, for its invention, innovation, financing, its relations with employees, suppliers, customers, its labor negotiations, its international activities. Knotty problems, both technical and personal, dishonesty, intrigue, overweening pride, malignant thinking, all have been healed. Fear, ignorance, and sinful conditions have been overcome. And then he says, I have used the seven synonyms that Mrs. Eddy uses for God as the basis of my prayers. Principle, the perfect, infinite God, giving man the expectation and understanding that he is the image of God, and that his activities are in reality perfect, infinite in quality, and eternal, giving man dominion over all limitations and fulfilling every right, objective, and aim. Life, giving the supply of energy equal to the demand, conferring strength, health, tirelessness, well-being, enthusiasm, and joy. Truth, bestowing priceless integrity, honesty, constancy, fairness, justice, judgment, bringing us a reputation for trustworthiness and confidence among our business affiliates and customers. Love, bringing physical healing and freedom from every bodily challenge, and enabling us to pray wholeheartedly that our customers, our suppliers, yea, our competitors may all be blessed. The result? The very best for all. Not merely acceptable, but richly rewarding for all. Soul, conferring a spiritual radiance and trust that has no element in it of haste, of pressure, of superstition. For soul takes the reins of business, leading, guiding, directing, planning, and paving the way for success. Spirit, the quickener which gives rest and refreshment, lifts burdens, and sustains contribution and endeavor, the controller of the quality of everything in the business. Mind, the source of all invention, creativity, and innovation, bringing constant refining, progressive development, and solutions to our every process and procedure. To sum it all up, our business, our company, would not exist or prosper without the teachings of Christian Science, which reveal God as principle, life, truth, love, spirit, soul, mind, and man made in his image and likeness, having radiant dominion over all the earth. Today, through this reliance on Christian Science, this business has encircled the world with its manufacturing facilities, its installation facilities, its licensees, and its sales organization. And this has indeed been a businessman who has planted, sown, and reaped through the guidance of divine mind. This businessman's approach exemplifies what Mrs. Eddy has given in the manual of the Mother Church as God's requirement on each loyal Christian Scientist. She says, God's requirement. God requires wisdom, economy, and brotherly love to characterize all the proceedings of the members of the Mother Church, the First Church of Christ Scientists. And Christian Science not only gives success and accomplishment to the businessman, but Christian Science protects the businessman. And at this point, I'd like to read a letter to you from a businessman attesting to the healing power of Christian Science. He writes, at the time this incident took place, I was employed by a national manufacturer of air conditioning equipment. A customer was having difficulty with a large 75 horsepower air conditioning compressor. It had failed twice. In an attempt to see what was going on inside the compressor when it was running, I decided to temporarily replace a cast iron crankcase inspection cover about 8 by 12 inches with a heavy piece of plexiglass. We recognized there was a risk involved. During the test, I kneeled down on the floor and was looking directly into the plexiglass about a foot away. When it blew out with such force, I was knocked across the room and slammed into another piece of machinery. The force of the explosion knocked me out. I do not know for how long, but I remember very clearly that when I regained consciousness, I was repeating the scientific statement of being from the Christian Science textbook. Let me read it to you. There is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and man is his image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material, he is spiritual. A co-worker called an ambulance and also called my wife, who was notified of the accident, who immediately called a Christian Science practitioner to help. I remember nothing about the next 5 hours in the emergency room at the hospital, as I had lapsed into unconsciousness again. But I came to after my wife and son arrived at the hospital. I learned later that as soon as she reached the hospital, she requested that I be released. But she was informed that the eye surgeon would have to be the one to release me. While waiting for him, I had the opportunity to talk with the practitioner. All the mental confusion left me immediately. When the eye surgeon wheeled me into his office for the examination, I asked him not to proceed, stating I was a Christian Scientist and wished to rely on God for my healing. He called my wife in, told her of my request, and said he was familiar with Christian Science and knew of its healing efficacy, and that he did indeed have respect for my wish, but if both of us signed the release, he would then release me. His assistant objected strongly and did indeed tell him that perhaps he would incur legal penalties through the hospital because of his decision to release me. However, he stood by his decision and let me go. The following day, I talked with the practitioner and was filled with thoughts of man's perfection of the true idea of God. Fear was replaced with confidence, and the outcome was never in doubt. My wife told me later that she did not allow me to ever look at myself for at least 6 days. When she had come into the hospital, she told me she'd been unable to recognize me because my head had received the full force of the blow and was swollen so badly and so out of shape that she could not recognize me at all. My eyes were filled with plexiglass splinters. My face was cut completely through at the mouth, and plexiglass splinters were all through the flesh of my face. By the time we reached home, in about 35 minutes, the cuts had dried and appeared closed. And for 6 days, I never looked in a mirror because my wife would not permit me, and on the 6th day, I returned to work. The healing was steady day by day and beautiful. My head was restored to its normal shape and size, and I was indeed freed of all the splinters in my flesh, of all of the splinters of plexiglass in my eyes, and my sight was perfectly normal. I'm grateful for this healing, for it did indeed reveal to me God's guidance, first of all in the opportunity to talk to the practitioner before the eye examination, and to be reinforced with the truth of being. Secondly, to know what to say clearly to the eye surgeon when during the previous hours I had been unconscious most of the time. And third, for having a doctor so respectful of Christian Science, and fourth, for a quick and complete healing. His wife added a note, being able to work together, our son included, to see this healing has given us a closeness and appreciation and confidence in each other's love and understanding of the truths of the Christ Science. The knowing of the reliability of turning to our Father, Mother, God for help is always with us and sustains us. Mary Baker Eddy, in referring to Jesus' understanding of the economy of man, states that Christian ideas certainly present what human theories exclude, the principle of man's harmony. And she says that Jesus' statement, "Whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die," not only contradicts human systems, but points to the self-sustaining and eternal truth. That statement is from Science and Health. The coincidence of the human and the divine, as it appears in Christ Jesus, is fully made evident in the fact that Jesus understood the economy of man more fully than anyone else. He knew that God was the divine principle of man's harmony, and he illustrated this by showing his disciples how to find the tax money in the fish's mouth, how to profit, as he set forth in his parable of the talents, and how to feed the hungry multitudes, feeding 5,000 men beside women and children one day. He sent his disciples forth, first with money and with scrip. But he sent them forth later without money and without scrip, depending on their inspiration and study, their recognition of the divine economy enabling them to manage their affairs with judgment and justice and a perfect sense of supply. He taught them not to fear for their food or for their raiment, or for their clothing, or for their abode, teaching them with lovely tenderness and stressing that God does indeed clothe man as he doth the lilies and watches over them as he doth the sparrows, knowing that God has given man complete sufficiency, adequacy, and abundance. Jesus beheld man as the full, complete idea of God, always possessing perfect harmony, and endowed through the ever-sustaining and eternal truth, which is divine providence, the source of man's harmony and the source of man's economy of being. Through divine providence, man conforms to correct moral action, to principled motivation, to integrity and to honesty of character, and he adheres to and conforms to professional standards of right conduct. How grateful we can be that in the domestic economy, in the political economy, in the bodily economy, in the human economy, in the economy of living, in the economy of man, all terms that Mrs. Eddy uses, that in all aspects of economy, divine principle regulates and controls, and divine love ameliorates the severe and acute human challenges of inequality, of inequity, and of burden in the economy of human affairs. For economy is indeed secure under divine providence. Every time I read that lovely chapter in Proverbs, chapter 31, I am reminded of Mary Baker Eddy. The question is asked in Proverbs, who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. She considereth a field and buyeth it. With the fruit of her hands she planteth a vineyard. In all aspects of Mrs. Eddy's life, she demonstrated her knowledge of the divine economy of providence, and she knew that it was indeed the basis of true security. In the conduct of her homes, in the conduct of her church, in the establishment of its rules for its government, in her farsightedness in business transactions, in her choice of able men and women to conduct the financial affairs of her church and the activity of her church, in her strict adherence to principle in all dealings, In her vision in establishing the Christian Science Monitor, her gift to the world of the finest newspaper in the publishing media today. She always moved with alacrity, with decisiveness, and with courage, and she demonstrated the highest standard of human ethics, morality, aims, and ambitions in order to bless all mankind. She rose from penury to affluence, from the ignominy of being a mere woman in the late 19th century, to being the forever discoverer, founder, and leader of Christian Science, the sole woman to found a religion that has withstood the test of time. Let us give her the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gates. And let us remember that God is man's employer, that man is God's employee, and that man's employment is the reflection of God's infinite nature and all of the glorious qualities to be derived from it. The promise is that imperialism shall yield to humanity, that monopoly shall yield to ethics, and that lax religion shall be corrected and strengthened by a true Christianity. And Mrs. Eddy gives us a promise that through divine love, all our debts are paid, mankind blessed, and God glorified. In conclusion, let us pray. The universe of God is forever established in enduring harmony and indestructible peace. The spiritual power of God's glorious truth is bringing man forth from bondage. God's mercy and love are here to bring swift and sure release from fear. His illuminating grace lightens all the dark places of earth. His undeviating law establishes his kingdom forever. Man is dear to God, beloved of him, and man resides under the grace of God, is held in God's favor, is the recipient of the outpouring of his munificent abundance. God's affluence sustains and supports man. An endless flow of God's bounteous gifts reveal the amplitude of God's love for man. Man is precious to God. Man enjoys the favor of God's grace. And this is man's glorious heritage as the child of God. God's impartial love encompasses his creation. His universe is filled, yea, peopled by his obedient ideas, his beloved children. God's universe is controlled by divine principle, sustained by infinite life, regulated by spirit, impelled by truth, fed by love, guided by and directed by mind, and settled, stabilized, and satisfied by soul. Let us see that the earth is not made up of hemispheres, of half-spheres, of east and west spheres, or north and south spheres. The earth is defined by Mary Baker Eddy in the glossary in Science and Health as a sphere, a type of eternity and immortality, which are without beginning or end. And then she says, to material sense, earth is matter. To spiritual sense, it is a compound idea. End of the quotation. As you and I grow in the perception that our earth is not halved or quartered, divided or separated by meridian or equator, we will begin to see that it is indeed a unisphere, one full, complete, undivided spiritual compound idea. And this spiritual sense of earth will heal the schisms, the divisions, the envious competitions, the warring factions of hate. For the earth is in reality one complete, harmonious whole reflecting God's universe. And God's universe is one whole, a perfect system of ideas forever moving in frictionless harmony. God's love fills all space. There can be no explosion of pent-up material elements in God's universe, for evil has no reign, no rule, and no kingdom. The Christ requires the government of the universe to be that of infallible truth. And the reign of the Christ is established. There is no other power to contest it. The so-called forces of evil, of envy, and of hate cannot undermine it or flagrantly oppose it. The Christ exposes, denounces, and destroys every false claimant to power. The Christ is the strong deliverer, the sure protector, the perfect defender. And any other claim to power fails before the glorious majesty of the Christ truth. All control of God's universe is held in His grasp. He relinquishes it to none other. There is nothing to fear. God's allness negates any claim of another power or presence, for God is all in all. And all is therefore in His keeping, for He is the great I Am. Our infinite, ever-present, omnipotent and omniscient Father, Mother, Love, forever holding His beloved children in perfect safety, abiding joy, in continuity and immortality, radiant peace, and the illimitable abundance of His riches. I should like to leave with you some statements from Mary Baker Eddy, statements which do indeed give a lovely conclusion to our lecture this afternoon. She has written in Science and Health that mortals are hastening to learn that light is God good and that evil has neither place nor power in the human or the divine economy. And in Christian Healing she has written, "Which to you hath the most actual substance, wealth and fame, or truth and love? See to it that you abound in love and truth, for unless you do this, you are not demonstrating the science of metaphysical healing." And in the First Church of Christ Scientist and Miscellany, she writes, "All that is worth reckoning is what we do. And the best of everything is not too good, but is economy and riches. A deep sincerity is sure of success, for God takes care of it. And whatever changes come to this century or to any epoch, we may safely submit to the providence of God, to common justice, to the maintenance of individual rights, and to governmental usages. You and I can rejoice in Mrs. Eddy's promise that the atmosphere of the human mind, when cleansed of self and permeated with divine love, will reflect this purified subjective state in agriculture, manufacture, commerce, and wealth, governed by honesty, industry, and justice, reaching out to all classes and peoples. For these signs of the times, we thank our Father, Mother God." The conclusion of Mrs. Eddy's statement. Let us rejoice that man is never an Eve or an Adam, never under curse or penalty. Man can never lose his true harmonious state in the economy of God's wisdom and government, for economy is secure under divine providence. Thank you for coming, and good afternoon.